It's Tuesday, January 9th, and that can only mean one thing. Level One News.
I've got a great joke for you. I've got a prediction that you're about to walk into a bar. My prediction was wrong, and your wallet's gone.
Now, there's going to be a delineation in the audience. Half of you won't get it. 25% of you will groan, and 25% of you will chuckle. If you're in that last 25%, something ain't right.
There's like 3% that is cackling right now with Orm, and they're commenting, and it's just the YouTube comments are just going to be filled with, like, I don't know what kind of laugh that is, but that's something.
But if you don't know what we're talking about, good news. We're going to tell you about it.
In fact, it's probably going to be like half the news.
And of course, I can't imagine, if you care about this kind of thing, how you wouldn't have already heard about this. This is, of course, the predictive part of the CPU has a problem. That's the joke, you see. If the prediction is wrong, it opens you up to things being stolen. That's the joke. I always tell Wendell, never explain the joke. But I think that this is the exception that proves the rule. We have to explain this one.
I love explaining the joke, and I don't know why, and I can't help myself, and it always ends badly every time. First, follow-ups and corrections. We don't really have any follow-ups or corrections this week.
I kind of baked the follow-ups into the news this week because we had to lead with this.
Google, almost all CPUs since 1995 are vulnerable to meltdown inspectors. So these are two different flaws in CPUs. One has to do with branch prediction. A branch in a program is when you get to something like an if statement. And so if this happens or if this other thing happens, and you don't know, the computer is said to branch at that if statement. And so it could execute code down both chains. And there's also speculative execution where maybe your program is running along and it needs to get something from main memory. That actually takes a long time, you know, upwards of 100, 150, maybe 200 cycles of the CPU. So it'll look at the rest of the work in its queue, then the upcoming instructions, and it'll try to go ahead and execute those instructions while it's waiting on that operation from main memory. And by exploiting those two properties of a CPU, which are essential for a CPU to actually have decent performance, at least a modern CPU, it turns out that you can leak information about stuff in memory that you're not supposed to have access to. Like a user program could use those features of a CPU to learn something about system memory. And this is a really big deal.
And one of the important things about Google figuring this out is that Google has known about this since June. Now, somebody else found it. Google was, you know, they were doing the whole bro thing with Intel, and they were like, hey, we found this. You need to get on top of it. Intel, I don't think they really tried too hard. But then someone else, I don't remember the guy's name, do you? The researcher who found it. And Google came out and they're like, oh, yeah, we kind of knew about this. So they've known since June.
Yeah, Intel has finally issued, there's some press releases that we'll talk about in a minute, but there are some updates that Intel has issued to protect systems from security exploits. You can't see it, but there are actually invisible air quotes around that word protect. Maybe if you're, you know, a lawyer, there's an asterisk there with some legalese at the bottom, but the protect word there is very special.
Microsoft, Apple, Google, everybody has been issuing updates like mad because it is kind of a software fix to get around this thing. I think the Intel's looking at firmware updates as well. But it's mostly software, and I think we're going to have to see in the real world how much performance hit there is, but there is a performance hit. Yeah. That's almost guaranteed.
Yeah, and it varies a lot depending on workload, and it's going to vary a lot depending on that whole context switch thing. Like, if your user program is doing most of its stuff in user land, you can do everything without having privileged access to the system, your workload's probably not going to be affected. If you're running other services where you have to switch back and forth between system context and user context, it's going to be bad. It's going to be hairy-carry. You don't have to look very far to find things like this in the industry. You can go to the Amazon support forum, and it is filled with hundreds and thousands of people that are now having trouble after Amazon has rolled out the patch and their performance has tanked. Now, obviously, that's not everyone on AWS because they have millions of customers, but certain workloads will suffer dramatically from these changes.
It is definitely bad news for everybody on the cloud. It's bad news for almost everybody, all the Apple devices, You know, of course, Intel, this is all their CPUs. It's bad. It's that's 80, 90% of the market. But you know who's feeling real good right now is AMD.
AMD has issued a press release and said information security is a priority at AMD. And so the Spectre and Meltdown attacks, there's basically three variants of these types of attacks. And AMD hardware is basically not vulnerable at all to Meltdown. Variant one is like resolved by software OS up. This is a bounds check bypass type thing that does exploit the kind of out of order execution that we were saying before. The fix for AMD seems to be to introduce just another instruction. A lot of the press has gotten way ahead of themselves. I mean, when this was first reported, it was even ahead of the official announcement. People were just sort of trying to reverse engineer patches in a Linux kernel. And one of the reasons that we did not report on it right away is because it was just this terrible cloud of confusion and misinformation. And everybody that was reporting stuff was just in this sort of race to report it first. And there were a few people that you know, sort of held back and, you know, ran benchmarks and sort of gathered information and things like that. But we still don't have the whole picture on Spectre and Meltdown. It's really going to take a few weeks for us to really quantify and realize what the problems here are. You know, in Intel's press release, they felt it was important to point out that AMD and ARM, ARM, the embedded processors, all had similar problems, but that's really misleading. AMD's problems seem to be much less severe. Variant 2, AMD is saying, we don't think we're going to be vulnerable to this because Variant 2 has not been demonstrated on any AMD processors to date. And this bounds check bypass, the fix seems to be to just send one instruction to the AMD processor. The processors on the Intel side and the AMD side have features where the operating system can tell the CPU, hey, this process is running as a privileged process, this is running as a user process, this is a different user process. On the AMD side of the things, the vulnerability is really that one user mode process could read from another user mode process, not that it could read from like system mode. So it's bad to be sure, but it's not as bad as on the Intel platform. And apparently there's one instruction, the operating system vendors can insert one instruction when there's a context switch to signal the processor that context switch has happened. And then page faults that are happening in the out of order execution are not evaluated, which sort of works around the issue without too much of a performance penalty or really any performance penalty at all. On the Intel side of the world, it's looking like one instruction is going to have to map to seven instructions to work around this. So again, depending on your workload, depending on how much you call that, it really could be a severe issue. But all the cards are not in, all the chips are not in. There's a microcode update coming, I think January 9th, something like that. So we haven't
which
had a chance to.
Which is today.
Yeah. So right. Yeah. So obviously we haven't had a chance to play with that yet. That may be in next week's news. There's going to be follow-ups and things like that. So it's a really good day for AMD. I bet they're really happy. I bet Jim Keller is like, yeah, that's why I'm Jim Keller. Jim Keller's the man.
Certainly, if you're putting together, you know, some sort of cloud computing enterprise solution, or even just building a PC right now, you got to be looking at AMD, right? Unfortunately, January is one of those months where nobody spends money. So I was like, damn it, why couldn't you have figured this out last month? That end of year spending.
Intel has also boldly come out and said there's not going to be any chip recall after Spectre and Meltdown. This is, you know, I bet some enterprise customers might convince Intel, if there's not a refund, to have a rebate or something like that on future generation hardware.
That's what they talk about in this article. They also talk about, it seems on the surface like this is not the case, but it is. You know, to the layman who reads this, they're probably going to see this as a smoking gun, but the Intel CEO sold a lot of stock last year.
Remember, of the stock that he could legally sell.
Remember, he's known since June.
Yeah.
So he pretty much emptied out. He has to keep 250,000 shares to keep his job. He got rid of everything else. So it may be a little fishy.
Yeah, it's is it like Equifax fishy? I don't know.
Nah,
I looked into this, and so the new hotness in CEO land is to set up automated sales and then defer the automated sale if you want to. So you basically, it's almost like a dead man switch. It's like you go ahead and schedule your shares to be sold, and then you cancel the sale at the last minute.
Well, you have to give them a lead time.
Yeah.
So that makes sense, you know, just to get the option.
So, he formalized the paperwork in October, but
which is after June.
But one of the Intel spokespeople said that, well, they'd been talking about that even before June, and that's, you know, how that happened. So I'm going to be real surprised if after the Equifax thing, the SEC found no wrongdoing. I'm going to be real surprised if the SEC finds any wrongdoing.
I don't think the SEC will find any wrongdoing. I think that has nothing to do with whether or not there was wrongdoing. But to be sure, if not calculated, it was lucky. He would have been smart to do it because it took a 5% hit the day this was announced. I don't know how it's done since then.
Now, he's, and Brian Krasnick is an interesting guy because he's got a degree in chemistry, and he actually started with Intel a long, long time ago doing the chemical process manufacturing, and then he led some plants and did supply chain management and things like that. So he's got the Intel pedigree. He's got the super technical pedigree. He may not have the computer science side of things, but I would say that he probably does. I'd say that he's been at Intel for a really long time, so I've really got to wonder what happened here from an architectural standpoint and from a testing standpoint, because Intel, I mean, look at what Google is doing with their billions of dollars. I mean, whether they're an evil company or not, they are trying to protect their bottom line, and their bottom line is cloud computing. So they need cloud computing to be as secure as possible, and that means they're going to be spending megabucks on security to make sure it is as secure as it can be. Google is the same leader in their field with processors. Why aren't they doing the same kind of thing internally? Or are they, and it's just ineffective?
I think they were trying to squeeze out that little bit of extra performance. You know, it always comes back to that. You're talking about a game of microseconds, and obviously to do this the safe way is a performance hit. So I think it all comes down to that.
It is true that I think that there is sort of some new computer science here. Like, I don't think that this was like a mistake in implementation necessarily. It's just a consequence of two things coming together that people didn't really think about, because I think that the guy that came up with out-of-order execution won a bunch of industry awards and just all kinds of stuff. I mean, it was groundbreaking to be able to do out-of-order execution and the performance benefits that brought. But at the same time, given that and given what you just said, when is it going to be fixed in silicon? And the back of the envelope napkin on that is like 2021 at the earliest.
Yeah. Well, I think all of Intel's future chips are going to have the firmware fix, but that will still be a performance hit compared to previous. So, yeah, I don't think they'll bother to, because look at the whole AMD Intel thing. They're already getting ahead of themselves trying to keep that pipeline full. You know, we have to announce something new every single year because that's the new thing. And so they've probably got them planned. They're probably already working, like you say, up until the 20s at least. And I don't think that they would throw all that away.
Does that mean that AMD is going to become, you know, the poster child company of companies like Facebook, Microsoft, and Google because their chips can be shown to be provably secure?
I think every AMD press conference, every AMD press release will have the word security in it from now on. I'll guarantee that.
It is true that AMD is the first to have the encrypted memory controller. If the encrypted memory controller in the second generation processors could be updated to include context-aware encryption, where you load the encryption-decryption key, and it's not an expensive operation to do that, that plus the encrypted memory controller could be the most amazing thing for cloud computing ever, because it would mitigate, like, if there's some issue discovered down the road that this is a problem for, the fact that your memory is encrypted and different regions of memory are encrypted with different keys would mitigate this problem almost completely.
Yeah. I don't know if... So here's the thing, though. You talk about Equifax, and how much do you think the average American who was not directly impacted by it remembers the Equifax thing?
0.0.
So 3 weeks from now, we might still be talking about this, but most people won't be, especially if the software fix works.
I think this means that I'm going to be able to buy $50 Xeon V4 CPUs on eBay.
Yeah, if it's in a situation where you're not all that concerned about this being used against you, this exploit, probably a good time to buy Intel chips.
I mean, I was able to get 8-core, 3 gigahertz Xeon E5s, like the launch day E5, like 2670s, for $50 because there was a bug with virtualization in those CPUs. And by the time it was discovered, it was too late. And between Google and Microsoft and Facebook unloading all of their servers based on that CPU, that is why you could get that CPU on eBay for $50. And that was a hell of a deal for $50. So yeah. All these CPUs, I mean, it's just going to be.
The one thing that could change that, though. So in the wild, people have had like 4 or 5 days to work on this. So if somebody managed to do something really incredible and make a huge theft during that time, and we don't know about it yet, that could change that. Like, that could bring it back and really, you know, twist the knife into Intel. But I don't know how likely that is. Seems unlikely.
It does seem a little unlikely. Intel is facing class action lawsuits over these bugs. This is going to be interesting because I don't know that... I couldn't get a sense of how technical these lawyers are. If these lawyers were just opportunistic or they have a specific business case that they're going to make, like, we relied on the Intel CPUs to keep this secure. Because Intel's position on this is basically that the CPUs are operating as designed. And that's not untrue. It's just that there's a flaw in the design.
Yeah. I mean, with the speed at which these came about for a class action lawsuit, seems a little opportunistic. Maybe just, you know, be first. Get that first settlement before they start, you know, trying to dig their heels in. I don't know. Everything about this, really, is just still unsettled.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we really don't know. It could go horribly, horribly bad, or it could turn out to be a mild annoyance, you know, a little bit of a performance hit.
Now, it also turns out that this vulnerability has opened up some holes in unexpected places. If you want to learn more about the technical end of this or citation needed for any of the stuff that we've said, check out this post from Bruce Schneier. There's also a rundown of how this vulnerability will affect JavaScript. So JavaScript, you know, Chrome and Microsoft, Google for Google Chrome, the Chrome JavaScript engine, they've been working on performance tuning on those JavaScript engines to the point that JavaScript now executes quickly enough that this type of attack could be employed in JavaScript. And so it may be possible to read other data from within the Chrome process, including saved passwords, through JavaScript, because of a hardware bug in your CPU.
And they are already rolling out fixes. I think Firefox has, Chrome has, Edge has. Safari hadn't made an announcement yet. But it does, like, the process is where they're making the change. You're talking about going from 1 microsecond to 20 microseconds. So
JavaScript just got a lot slower.
How do you think this affects CoinHive? It's bad news if you're a CoinHive malware.
No, CoinHive, no. I can't mine in the browser anymore. down with this sort of thing.
But that is, you know, you talk about how this, for at first it was kind of like, well, how likely is this to affect anybody who's not on the cloud or whatever? But if it can affect your browser, this is such an amazing, like the ability that this gives you would make it worthwhile for bad actors to go through the horrible process of actually getting it to work because of what you can reap from it. So through the browser, that would be really, really bad.
So turn off JavaScript, everybody.
No script downloads, just went through the roof.
That's not really, I mean, I don't think that's really possible and viable on the modern web, just because so much stuff depends on JavaScript, but geez.
I have the one no script browser, and then I default over to the other one when that doesn't work, and more, just you might as well, like, news stories, they just won't load the page. Like, I'm sorry, I'm not playing ball with you if you don't use my JavaScript.
First load the analytics, then load the news page. And it's like, guys, this is how you drive your audience away. Don't do that. It's terrible. This isn't unprecedented, though. There's something called the foof bug. There's also the fdiv bug. Intel actually did do a product recall all those years ago. But the trick then was they made the product recall process so onerous and so terrible that it was basically impossible to get your CPU replaced. And like the advanced replacement process where like you would notify them, they would get your serial number off your CPU, then send you another CPU so you could send the one back, was just, it was a mess. It was just an unmitigated mess. And Intel reacted exactly the same way then as they are now.
And foof would just cause your CPU to lock up and hang, which of course that's bad and that's annoying, but it's not nearly as bad as revealing the contents of your memory to an outside attack.
I don't know. I don't know which one Amazon would say is worse. There's going to be a lot of, like, it's already the situation where there are a lot of system administrators that have Amazon infrastructure, and they are underpaid and they are overworked, and the businesses that they're working for, the vast majority of businesses, I would say, really do not understand the technology that they're working from. Most companies, whether they realize it or not, even if you just like make widgets, like if you make toilet seats, I don't care. You are a technology company first. And there's just no way around that. No matter what you do, the technology will drive your business. And so there are administrators in the vast majority of those businesses that don't understand their technology companies. And they're looking at their tank to Amazon performance, and they're looking at other situations that they may be having, and they're just going to turn off the protection. It's like the Apache Struts vulnerability that led off to Equifax. That it's that times 1,000. I mean, that Equifax is the perfect microcosm for most companies.
Well, look at we actually, this week we don't have an Amazon AWS with no password, which is unprecedented. We have one almost every week. But you look at that, and you have this idea that people want to be part of the cloud. They're like, oh, the cloud's the future. Let's get into the cloud. They have no understanding of it whatsoever. Okay. And yeah, this, I think people know the buzzwords and they'll pretend that they know what you're talking about, but in reality, not really. And that will lead to, as you say, just make it back to where it was fast. I don't care about anything else.
Yeah. And then it's like, I don't understand how putting this thing in the form led to them compromising the integrity of the entire system.
But you compare it to the Foof thing. The Foof thing might have been bad from a business perspective, but there was no liability.
Yeah.
So with this one, you can lose everybody's date passwords and everything. And that's real bad.
So that's Spectre. I mean, I'm sure that you'll have more information from us as the story develops, but there's still a lot of information coming. There's a lot of benchmarking to be done. Some places have done benchmarking, and the benchmark results have shown basically no performance, maybe even a slight performance improvement because it's newer code with some optimizations, all the way to, 50% slower. And again, it just depends on what you're doing and what your workload is and how complicated it is. The details of this are yet to be shaken out. If you're a gamer, you're unlikely to really be affected. But if you've got your infrastructure in the cloud and you work in business, you'd really better dot your I's and cross your T's on this thing.
But that will be, because if that's the thing, if it's the cloud, if it's that group of users, that's a huge foot in the door for AMD to bump up that market share. And with an experience like this, a lot of people get soured on a particular brand. We hear this a lot from, because of course in the forum, people talk about, it's like, I got this hardware. What should I get? That's a constant question. Don't do that. We don't like that. But people will be like, it's like, oh, you should get this. Oh, I'm never buying NVIDIA. I hate them. So you wonder if they're going to be some, developers, and they're like, no, we will not have Intel. Intel will not be.
Never again. Yeah. I can't trust that they'll keep my memory secret. It's just like, come on, guys. I just don't understand. Well, switching gears a little bit, our first non-story about that, the FCC is preparing to weaken the definition of broadband. So this is exactly as we predicted. We predicted this would happen.
Predictions are dangerous.
Can I get Ajit Pai's wallet? Is that? Oh, but it was correct, so I don't get his wallet. That's terrible. Yeah, so they're going to make broadband. What was the speed? Was it like 5 meg?
10.1.
10.1, okay. Yeah, so 10.1. I was expecting like 5.1 or 5.12.
But if your wireless is 10.1, that counts. That's the big thing. And they're ignoring data charges and caps.
Yeah.
So it's crazy. It's madness.
So where is that on like the world broadband ranking?
That's number 200. Really low. I'm thinking probably most of Africa beats that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Wireless is just such trash. It's just.
Yeah. And the whole idea that wireless can replace wired and there's no difference. And
don't believe that. That is horse pucky.
And it's not going to cost more money. And plus, you're talking about like latency. You know, you're not going to be playing StarCraft on your wireless connection. Sorry.
It's literally wireless for the individual is literally like the Hunger Games for your data. It's just, whoever is the most fit or competitive or whatever wins and everybody else dies. And that's the ultimate end of it. It's like the guy down the street that can afford to pay $500 per gigabyte is going to be enjoying the wireless a lot more than you are with your commodity, 9-to-5 white collar job version of wireless, whatever that is.
So they're going to vote on whether or not that is the new standard. And do you think there is any possibility with that Republican-led FCC that doesn't go through? So
no.
If you're in one of those fringe areas where, was it Verizon was kicking people off?
Yeah, yeah.
Then, yeah, it's going to get worse.
I'm reminded of some of the memos. This is even before the Wheeler FCC administration. This was like in 2005. You know when all the AT&T companies were merging back together after they changed the rules to allow the mergers. The FCC then was saying, okay, we'll let you merge if you guarantee that all of your customers can get broadband. And it was like, you know, it wasn't even like the 45 meg they promised in the 96 Telecommunications Act. It was more like 20 meg and things like that. And the responses from the companies that were merging together that came back were always just really hilarious. It was like, well, we can promise 256K by 128K. And it's like, 256K by 128K? 6 years ago, you were promising 45 meg. How did you get to 256K?
What? You got to give it to them, though. Like, they will, I mean, they keep that bar low. Yeah. They're really good at managing those expectations. And somehow the government thinks it's okay, even though, like you say, on a worldwide stage, I mean, we're talking about, you know, the beginning of the internet levels of...
I can get 4 phone lines in my house with 4 modems with a faster connection than this. France's president, Macron, is that how you pronounce his name?
I think it's Macron.
Macron? I don't know. He wants to block websites during elections to fight fake news. So I can't see this ending well. Like, I mean, I guess his heart's in the right place. It just seems really dumb.
Yeah, and the way it works is the government says what website has to be blocked, and then it has to be blocked immediately. But wait a minute. You mean the government that's trying to stay in power versus the people who are trying to defeat them who don't have the privilege of using that?
It seems like this is a problem that you solve before it's a problem. This is like one of those ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure type problems, because if you had a population that realized that there was some element among them that would literally just post lies to whip them into a frenzy, if the population realized that could happen and that may be going on, it seems like this would be a non-issue.
Yeah, but... then they would look at all the historical times that the government did that and they would be confused. But yeah, all of this fake news stuff, the unspoken part of that is there's fake news out there. Okay. We can agree on that. Sure. That's provable. There is fake news, but the unspoken part of it is, and you're too stupid to know the difference. And a lot of people, when you say that to them, then they'll be like, well, people are too stupid to know the difference. Of course, that goes back to the everybody except me. I, of course, know the difference. It's these other morons. And that's no way to run a country. That's no way to treat your fellow men. Everybody just has to sort of work on their own merit here. That's the baseline we have to work from.
It seems like if you can read and write, you would have basic reasoning skills, and this would not really be an issue.
And if you can't read, fake news doesn't affect you.
Well, that's where we're going, though, isn't it? I mean, it's really, that's what it comes to. It's like, we need to block websites, and we need to do all this. It's like, well, if we just prevent people from learning how to read, fake news probably goes away.
Well, doesn't that go back to kind of like the Catholic Church, Martin Luther argument? Like, these peasants, they cannot communicate directly with God. They'll just piss him off. So... we can't let this happen.
Now, this story says that, okay, there we go. White House has banned the use of personal devices from the West Wing. So I guess this is because of security concerns?
It's because of that book. The book that came out that's like, you know, really bad looking for Trump. Security concerns. Yeah. And his war with Bannon. So he feels that people are using their personal devices, I guess, to interact with reporters or record things. I don't even know. But anyway, not going to happen anymore. Going to have to. They did mention that Obama did this on certain parts of the White House. So like a security type thing, I guess. So not unprecedented, but people will take any opportunity to shit on Trump. So
speaking of things like that, the FCC chairman Ajit Pai's appearance at CES has been canceled. Probably because he was afraid of being mobbed.
Well, no, they updated this story, actually. They claim it was death threats.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so who could have predicted? Here we go predicting again, even though it's dangerous. Who could have predicted that if you screw the entire country hard and fast and do it in such a transparent way and just sort of mock them about it and hold your stupid coffee cup, that some of them will want to kill you?
Moving right along. After beating the cable lobby, the Colorado City moves ahead with municipal broadband. This is the place that we reported on before. You might remember this commercial that we linked to it.
This would have been a follow-up.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It got bumped.
They're moving ahead with municipal broadband, basically.
They still had to vote. Even though they won the case, they still had to vote. And it was unanimous. They said, yes, we will take it. And it's going to be neutral. They guaranteed neutrality. And they guaranteed no selling of personal information. So, you know, the broadband industry, they were like, no, this is dangerous. It's bad for you. Seems like a win on all counts.
I would like to see what sort of punitive action the telecom companies are going to take. Maybe they're just going to all abandon ship immediately. I don't know. But if I were Comcast, like if I were like the regional manager and I had time to do this, and the city were offering me, it's like, we will guarantee that our infrastructure will meet this reliability metric or this whatever, which meets or exceeds my own infrastructure, and it's going to cost less for me to just rent that infrastructure from the city than to maintain it on my own. Why wouldn't I do that? Like, as a business, like a business case, if the duty is to the shareholders to bring the shareholders as much money as possible. This, I was kind of thinking about this, like how to structure this. If the shareholders for Comcast demand that they do the cheapest thing and the city can actually do it cheaper than Comcast is doing and guarantee the performance, as a shareholder, wouldn't the shareholders demand that they lease that infrastructure from the city and abandon their own infrastructure?
You're thinking like a reasonable human being and not a Comcast executive. I'll tell you what the Comcast executive, how they're seeing this. They're like, okay, we've lost. They're going to build this. So what we do is we let them build it and we use our political influence to take it back in the coming years and use it for ourselves. And that way, we didn't spend any money to get this wonderful infrastructure, but we will steal it back eventually.
It's funny that you say that because that is exactly how this has played out in many, many locations. In, was it Provo, where Google took over? The telecom lobby allowed the infrastructure to be built, and then after the infrastructure was built, tried to buy it for pennies on the dollar, and that pissed off people in Provo so badly, that's when they sold it to Google. Neat how that works, isn't it?
But we should...
A little bit of an oversimplification.
People often complain, constantly, I guess I would say constantly instead of often, that the news is bad, and that makes them sad. And they like the program, but the news is just so bad. So we should just bask in this silver lining while we can. The people of Colorado have won, and you know that's one for the home team.
It's going to be amazing to see what they develop, I think. It's going to be pretty neat. Could be wrong. Pretty sure. Germany has started enforcing the hate speech law, and of course the Facebook picture is totally appropriate. So anything that is obviously illegal, you can get an insta fine of, you know, up to 50 million euros.
They have targeted, of course, this is another follow-up. We've talked about how they sort of told us, like, you're not doing enough, and if you don't, we're going to have to do it for you, and this is kind of them doing it for them. And
That's obvious, because I'm real dense.
Started January 1st, and the threshold here is any sort of social, which, well, what does that even mean? Any kind of user base. Over 2 million users. So, of course, Facebook, Google, YouTube, yada, yada, yada. But also Reddit and I guess Instagram, Twitter, all those people will be beholden to. You get 24 hours once the German government tells you something has to come down. If it doesn't, 44 million.
Wow. Reddit is kind of an obscure one, though, because you can have an obscure subreddit that's very far off the beaten path and lots of terrible things going on there.
Do you remember when they banned, was it one of those Donald Trump style subreddits? And people were complaining because they were like, hey, this subreddit still exists. And it was like beautiful dead girls or something like that. So like,
who's ever even heard of that?
But you count the overall Reddit user base, right? Not those subreddits. So do you think like everything is a violation there now?
Well, okay, if that is true, that is a violation, what about a company like DreamHost? You know, DreamHost or HostGator or GoDaddy? Well, GoDaddy, I mean, I guess maybe, but like HostGator, no one customer of HostGator has 2 million users, but HostGator itself has maybe 2 million customers just buying little $5 and $10 websites.
Didn't they apply that to Freedom Hosting, the white supremacist website thing?
Because
Germany definitely shut that down, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's how they'd see it.
So there's not this whole like 2 million limit. It doesn't really apply. They won't go after you. They'll go after your provider, and your provider won't want to fool with it, and they'll just shut you down.
Yeah. So a lot of people, the Euros, at least the ones who were vocal enough to make comments, they don't think this is a bad thing, it seems like. It seems like the consensus is, no, we need to censor speech. That's important, which is a little scary, in my opinion.
I don't know.
Next thing you know, they'll want to do it during the election for fake news.
It's so complicated. It's really hard to, I mean, it's easy to see it from both sides, but at the same time, we know that censorship leads to a bad result from the historical. I don't think censorship with computers is different than censorship with the printing press.
Well, let's take it to an extreme, right? Let's say that they get this sort of control and they create the systems where you can suppress speech immediately and it, you know, like really, really just shut it down. What if the government says, you know what, this Spectre and this meltdown thing, this is going to be really bad for the GDP. It's going to create a security risk. It's terrible. So why don't we just censor any talk about that?
And the intelligence or apparatus will just keep that for ourselves.
Why don't we just make sure, because as long as nobody knows about it, it's not a threat. As long as, you know, just like a couple people and we'll tell them, we will kill you if you tell anybody about this. Yeah, so do we get to that world? You know, wouldn't we already be in that world if they thought they could get away with it?
I feel like that's got to be the plot of some science fiction books where like, you know, the protagonist figures out something and then they go to wherever they figured out whatever that is. And they're like, oh my gosh, people have been here before me, but what happened to them? And then it's like, what's about to happen to me?
What was that kid from the hack? What's the Las Vegas hack festival thing where he got arrested?
DEFCON.
Yeah, the DEFCON thing. Remember him?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, oh, some other people figured this out. Let me ask about it on Twitter. Arrested. Wow, we haven't got any follow-ups on him lately.
We should look into that.
Legal process moves slow.
He was like house arrest in California last time we checked.
I think that's still the case. Could be wrong.
It's got to be expensive.
Google's Dutch sandwich shielded 16 billion euros from taxes. This Dutch sandwich sounds really lewd.
I guarantee it's the Irish, what was the Irish?
Like the double Irish.
Double thing. Irish and the Dutch sandwich. For sure. Urban Dictionary has some alternate definitions of what these things are.
There goes our monetization. Now's a good time to join Patreon.
Can we come up with a title for this week that incorporates the Dutch sandwich?
The double Dutch sandwich of indirect execution. The indirect Dutch. There we go. The indirect Dutch sandwich. I don't know. It is. So this is just a way of moving money around. Apparently, Google siphoned billions of dollars through a company that did not actually have any employees.
So you have two Irish companies. That's the double Irish. You transfer money through the Dutch company to the other Irish company. That's the double Dutch. And then the whole thing goes to, was it Bermuda or Barbados?
I think it was Bermuda.
Where there are no taxes. So they estimate that Google saved about $4.4 billion doing this. It is legal.
100%.
Technically. But as you can see, it shouldn't be. Now, a funny thing about this, if people are really, really shitting on the Trump tax plan. But the Trump tax plan will actually make this more difficult, at least in America.
The other interesting thing about the tax plan is that if you have earnings from investments, that's taxed at a much lower rate versus earnings from income, which seems kind of odd. It's like the working man is going to pay more taxes. But if you have, you know, if you have the original Apple shares from like the 1980s and you're just living off of those, you know, selling a couple shares every now and then, that is taxed at a lower rate now, which seems weird.
There's also, I think we used to be able to delay taxes till you repatriated the money, and that's not going to be true anymore. So this might be the last year they get away with this kind of thing, but $4.4 billion, that is quite a... the accounting team earned their money for Google this year, for sure.
Our next story is 100% a follow-up, but I feel like we have to preface this story by saying there were a lot of people in the comments. It might have been one of our most commented things for like a particular topic, because there were a lot of comments that told us that there is no way that what we said would happen in that episode of the news so long ago would happen has in fact now happened. And that is the personal data of a billion Indians has been sold online. It's about $6 or 6 British pounds per record, I think. And so that national database that was being put together, yeah, you can just buy access to it.
So if you don't remember the national database, there were a lot of little tiny municipalities, because you think about India. India is like some huge cities and then just jungles and little farming villages. And, you know, there's a ton of sprawl where population density is low and then big cities where population density is insane. And they said, you know what? We're going to get everybody in a database. And we're going to use biometrics. Yeah. Eye scans and thumbprints. So literally people were like hiking through jungles to get eye scans and thumbprints in these little tiny municipalities that's scattered everywhere. And of course now it's all been leaked.
It's online. So that's great. That's going to be great for identity theft.
You know, the other thing that the Indian people, a lot of Indian people drinking the Kool-Aid, it seems like, they were talking about, remember the war on cash,
mm-hmm.
the Indian war on cash. And that was tied into this. And they were like, no, it's great because, you know, these people are, we got organized crime and all that. And that kind of played out in a similar fashion. You know, you could only convert so much money per person. And so they would just pay these little rural people to convert money for them and give them a small percentage of it. And it worked out fine.
Doesn't seem like that would end badly at all. But yeah, no, we totally called it. If you build this ridiculous apparatus, it will be used against you at some point. That's why we're so afraid of the surveillance apparatus, is because if you build it, it will be used against you.
Now, we should mention that the official report from the Indian government says that the biometrics were not leaked. It was just all the other information, which is basically what's on a driver's license. So a lot of information. Some of the newspapers say that the biometric data is there. So who do you trust?
Yeah. Well, I think now that it's like, what usually happens is the hackers that have the biometric information, they're like, oh, we don't have that? Let's post it anyway.
Or, you know, it's sort of like, hey, here's for £6, you get the list. The biometric data costs much more. Contact us if you're interested.
Still, everything you need for identity theft, which now, is pretty great.
Also, it came with a program to print those cards. So you could just choose an identity, print the card. And then they use this for like the welfare state. So you can get
somebody else's
like
welfare
grain. Like they don't just pay money. So you can go and you show them your card and they give you a bushel of grain. And that's part of the, you know, the entitlement stuff. So you just print your card and go get your grain if you got this list.
Neat. So you just like set up a rotating operation. This seems like great for organized crime because you could just.
Yeah, just like the war on cash thing. Because the common person doesn't have a way to set that up. And they even talked about some people dying of hunger because there was some clerical error with their card. But they were like, no, I need to eat. And it's like, well, yeah, I'm sorry, I can't give you this without your card. Meanwhile, the organized crime can just
print another one.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that guy that died. Let's see. We have that problem here in America. You get welfare, like dead people collect welfare for years, sometimes even decades after they die.
Yeah. There's horrifying stories where they know if they have a funeral, that's the end. So they just keep the body in the basement,
yeah,
and keep collecting.
Yeah, one there's at least a couple of stories from the last 5 or 10 years where like the census showed up and we're like, this is the oldest person in the world lives here. They're 117, and it's like I haven't seen them in years. I don't know where they went.
You got to know when to fold them in that situation.
There was a macOS exploit published on the last day of 2017. This one flew under the radar. This one flew under our radar. This is a local privilege vulnerability escalation, which means that if you already have access to the system, you can become root. Apple doesn't really think those are serious issues, so there's no fix for this that's coming out in the next few days. Maybe in the next month or two? It's not really clear because, again, Apple doesn't prioritize these types of updates.
I hate to agree with Apple, but if you have physical access to a computer, we all know that there is no security. And without physical access, you have to have already compromised this computer somehow to put this in place. So it makes existing compromises more dangerous. But yeah, considering the other security flaws that are in the news, I don't think anybody's going to worry about this one.
This is one reason why until Apple changes their policy, Apple's in business are going to be a tough sell. because you've always got that, you know, the information worker on like level two who is just doing data entry all day. And if that person can lead to the compromise of like your entire server infrastructure, then companies are not going to support Macs, because that compromised Mac would be a great platform to execute attacks on the rest of the company's infrastructure.
No, you just keep selling to the hipsters for $15,000 a pop, and you'll do just fine.
We do have the iMac teardown coming up. It's exciting. Torrent Freak has got this article. I thought this was really interesting. Google is blocking pirate search results prophylactically. So what does that mean exactly? It means that they're blocking search results that contain pirated material before the search results even show up in the search index. So you can blacklist a URL even before Google has indexed it.
So what this means is these AIs that are going around, you know, finding copyright violation URLs and reporting them to Google are faster than Google can index the internet. So they're literally turning them off before they exist. And
doesn't seem like that could go bad.
Yeah. It is. It's not. If you're doing that, then guaranteed nobody's looked at it to see if it was an actual violation, right? That's the scary part about it. So this makes it almost guaranteed that if the law bot, the AI that's working for these law offices, doesn't like a link, you're never going to see it in Google.
I'm going to come up with some amazing shareware, and it's just going to be blacklisted for reasons that I don't understand because of this.
Yeah.
It's terrible. Dogecoin. I think we've talked about Dogecoin like maybe once or twice. The market cap
everybody knows about Dogecoin. It's so adorable.
It's worth $1 billion. I had to read this like three times because it's like, I can't believe, like, is this the Onion? What is this?
I don't know. I like how the creator of this is like, no, this is alarming. This was never meant to be a real currency. Now, it is only a little over 1 cent per Dogecoin, but still $1 billion market cap. Now, the other crazy thing, we didn't include a separate story. But for, I think Ripple crashed after this and it lost a lot. But for a little while, one of the Ripple guys, one of the creators, was worth more than Zuckerberg.
I don't know if it's a bubble or not. I mean, it seems like it would be a bubble, but maybe it's not. I don't know.
I was looking into Ripple a little bit. You know the crazy thing about Ripple? It's kind of like it's not decentralized like Bitcoin. It's like a PayPal type of thing. And the tokens aren't part of it. Like, you can use the Ripple system without tokens.
I don't understand why that would be super amazing.
Well, people love it. I wish I'd have bought some. I think it was up 30,000%.
Well, if you'd bought Dogecoin all those years ago, it's up like 400%.
So. You could definitely buy a lot of them.
I think I've got 1,000 Dogecoin somewhere. Somebody sent them to me as
a joke.
So you got
$10.
$10 now. It was some crazy amount of Dogecoin. It's just like, this is not... You think people are just moving the currency into Doge and back out again just as like a laundering thing?
Is Doge blockchain?
Yeah. It hasn't had any software updates in years, but...
2 years, yeah, they said the thing. It was like, this was a joke. You shouldn't be using it. And then here we are, everybody's... But, of course, it's kind of like the companies that put the word blockchain in their name and they just double their shares overnight.
The blockchain tea company.
We're definitely, it's a mania, but I wonder what stage of the mania that we're in. You know, that's the unknown.
Pre-crash, like the pre-tulip bulb crash.
You think we're there already? I think it's got some room.
No, I think that tulip bulb mania, it's hit like, you know, everybody's grandma is talking about Bitcoin. So it's like tulip bulb mania in that regard.
I think Tulip Mania lasted for like 10 years.
Oh, wow. Okay, well, let's see. That would be like 2 more years, I mean, I think.
You know, you have to compare like 6 months at sea versus, what was it like, it's an average of like a day to get your Bitcoin cleared this thing?
Somewhere between fidget spinner and tulip bulbs. Fidget spinner was what, like 6 months? I don't know.
But I would not, and I did buy a little bit of Bitcoin when it went to 1,300. And it's back. That, if I sold down, I would make money on that. But I'm not getting out on the Ripple craze or the Dogecoin craze.
The criminal underworld is in fact dropping Bitcoin for another currency. So, yeah, I don't know. The Bitcoin, like Bitcoin overall, like this is something most people don't understand. From 2 years ago, trading Bitcoin was like 98% of the cryptocurrency market. And now just by like number of trades executed, it's more like 49%.
Also, the blockchain law enforcement is getting onto software that tracks things in the blockchain. Now, you still have your coin mixers, but like we talked about, you're looking at transaction fees, crazy transaction fees these days.
Yeah.
And so that's going to slow down the use for these sort of things, you know, for the criminal activities.
Monero is also really popular in the criminal underworld.
Because it is built to be the sort of the antithesis of the blockchain. It's built to just be, you know, cryptography all the way. You don't know anything about it. And Zcash is the other one. Zcash, you don't even know who's sending you the money. Like, you don't have their address.
It just shows up.
Yeah. And it's encrypted somehow. So, I wonder. So, you know, we know the powers that be, the banks, they hate cryptocurrency. Until they can create their own, they hate it. And I wonder if they don't take this. They're like, look, Monero, Zcash, they're designed for evil. We must stop them. You know, I can see that coming.
We must stop all cryptocurrencies except the Chase coin.
Fed coin.
I don't know. China's been cracking down on Bitcoin lately too. So miners are shifting outside of China because the state, you know, sort of wants to be involved and wants control of that. China's concern is not the cryptocurrency mining. China's concern is the value leaving the country, and they just want to do everything they can to lock up that value in China.
So Canada, Iceland was one place they were going. The U.S., a couple other places. Now, none of those places have the cheap electricity that China has. So maybe we'll see a slowdown. I don't know.
If we see a slowdown, I don't know if that will be good or bad for the Bitcoin value. It seems like the scarcity would go up.
Yeah. Supply and demand would suggest. But, the Bitcoin world, who knows? It doesn't seem to follow any of the traditional financial rules. So
I think the other problem that we're going to have is once they fix the transaction speed. I mean, right now it seems like Bitcoin's network is limited to about 10 transactions per second. Once they fix that, we may actually see the value decrease just because it'll be more liquid than it already is.
Maybe. It seems like ultimately Bitcoin can't be the one that survives, right? Because it's like it's too old. It's got too many problems. And the people that come after it, its grandchildren can fix all those things.
Would you say it's the MySpace of Bitcoin or of cryptocurrency?
I hope not, because if what's the analog of Facebook to cryptocurrency? That's the most terrifying thing I've ever heard of in my life.
Is that Monero? Is that Ethereum? You know, I don't know.
No, because those are for privacy. The Facebook equivalent of the blockchain has to be tracking everything that you do. That's Fedcoin.
That's Fedcoin, yeah. Well, a little bit. It could be Ethereum a little bit, because Ethereum is not as decentralized. I don't know. It's sort of scary to think about.
I'm still going to hang on to my Bitcoin. I feel like we might have 30,000 someday. You know, I mean, this is...
We'll know soon enough.
Do we have to give that, financial... Where they do, the financial stories, and it's like, this is not meant to be... trading advice. This is for entertainment purposes only.
Well, there you go. In case you were, writing there with a notepad, it's like, does your Bloomberg terminal support Bitcoin? Is there a Bitcoin button where
you can trade futures now.
Still can't believe that you can trade Bitcoin futures on a Bloomberg terminal. That just seems, I don't know. Switching gears a little bit, CES has kicked off. There's already, CES news oozing forth. Oozing is probably the way that I would describe the news.
Secreting.
CES is secreting. Because CES, I mean, nobody buys things in January, so it's like, let's do stuff with CES. So I'm sure that you're going to see a lot of random stuff from CES from us. But the most exciting thing is the Intel CPUs with RX Vega was not actually... a made-up thing, because there have been rumors about that forever. There was even that leak where there was a guy named Vega, and it was like Intel processors with Vega inside, and it was like an internal employee promotion thing. It was like an employee of the month thing, and so it was like Intel inside with Randy, and then Intel inside with some guy named Vega, and somebody in the internet blew up with that and was like, oh my god, they're putting Vega in an Intel CPU. Well, nope. Video Cards has got this, and here's the presentation from Intel talking about this, and long story short, you're going to be able to get a laptop with an Intel CPU and RX Vega built in, thin and light performance, a little bit faster than a GTX 1060 with better battery life.
So you could play PUBG on this system.
It's kind of nice. There, of course, it's not one piece of silicon. It is multiple pieces of silicon. You've got the Intel CPU, and then RX Vega with its HBM memory. It's a PCI Express 3.0x8 connection between the two of them. But still, it's one package, which is pretty impressive.
I don't think they mentioned any kind of pricing today.
No, there's no. We have no idea what the pricing is going to be. Probably going to be nuts, if I know Intel.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's hard for me to get excited about integrated graphics. I just don't have any use for them. But I guess if you're a laptop gamer, and that's your world, you can look forward to that.
Yeah. Got
to
have a laptop with Thunderbolt. I don't know. Might be too little too late because the whole Thunderbolt external GPU thing is getting real popular. And it is long overdue, that functionality. ASRock also, they're leaking some news. ASRock is debuting new small form factor stuff. They've got a micro ATX Threadripper motherboard. It looks almost full fat. I mean, you got the quad channel memory. It's not a dual DIMM per channel. It's only one DIMM per channel. So, you know, 64 gigs of RAM at most instead of 128. But look, micro ATX. They've also got a micro ATX X299, same dual quad channel. A little different arrangement. Look at all those PCI Express bridges. That's just because the whole Intel, Intel's silly with the whole, you know, how they do their PCI Express lanes. And they've also got the Desk Mini GTX. So the deal with this, like, we reviewed the Desk Mini for Z270, and that system, it's awesome. It is tiny. It's great little home theater system. Super quiet, 2.5-inch drives. This one adds an MXM module for graphics. So GTX 1060, 1070, even a 1080 Max Q will fit theoretically in the MXM form factor. And there have already been a few reviews of this form factor. But GTX 1060 and that little thing, that thing is tiny. Look at that. This is the future of small form factor computing, I think, more than ITX. Because if you want an ITX, I'd feel like this for a home theater or this for an ultra portable system or something like that, this makes more sense in a lot of ways, especially with the MXM form factor. So I don't know. Everybody always gets really excited about tiny computers, and I don't, on one hand, it's like, okay, that's cool. But on the other hand, it's like, sometimes I have to go places and a laptop won't cut it. And it's like, I'd like to take one of those with me.
Yeah. I kind of feel the same way I do about integrated graphics. It's just, it's not part of my world, man.
I do like, I would settle for micro ATX. Like, if I can schlep around a 16-core micro ATX, probably okay. But if I did a lot of traveling and I needed some horsepower and I wanted a really tiny machine, the super portable one would be really good.
You just got to get the iMac tote bag.
The iMac, I mean, it's just like, have you guys seen that? It's just like a piece of foam you put over your iMac and it still has the foot and there's a handle and...
Well, you could get the leather, bag as well.
The hipster leather bag.
Yeah, and then the base sticks out of the sides.
I don't know. We'll have to add pictures of that in post. I don't know. It's just iMac. HP has recalled 50,000 lithium-ion laptop batteries over a fire risk. This seems like a lot, but, you know, for the number of laptops manufactured in a year, this really isn't that much.
The crazy thing about it is this is a non-user replaceable battery. So the replacement involves someone coming to your house and doing the replacement. That can't be cheap. That's going to hurt them.
Cheaper than your house burning down and them having to pay you back.
That's true. I think they had 8 different situations where they got hot and some of them charred some furniture. One person got a first degree burn. And so they've decided, oops, go ahead and swap those out.
Do we cheap out on the parts inside the battery? Should we not have done that?
Or should we maybe have made the battery user replaceable? You know, hey, Apple, is that a good idea, Apple?
I like the battery layout inside the Asus UX32VD. You have to take off like 10 really tiny screws, and then the metal bottom just falls away. And so I feel like that is a reason. It's not like field replaceable, like you just squeeze some hinges and the battery falls out. But I feel like that level of replacement battery is where we should be for laptops.
Probably. I think the math problem is not anything to do with the hardware form factor. It's to do with the buy replacement rate.
Planned obsolescence.
Right. and you get burned by something like this, but you're still making more money by people throwing them away, that this is fine.
Well, iFixit has got the new iMac teardown, which is kind of fascinating.
Yeah, you said that the ASRock thing was the future of small form factor computing. No, friend.
It's the iMac. They did actually manage to get 4 full-size DIMMs in there, which is kind of impressive. I thought the heatsink for this thing was really anemic, though.
It's, well, I mean, it's fairly big, and they got the big cooler, but...
The heat pipes. Like, this would probably be okay for, like, the 6 or the 8 core, but, like, the 18 core?
You think it's exactly the same,
though? I guess it might be different. I would hope that the 18 core was about 6 inches thicker and just solid copper, because that's what you would need.
Now, they did talk about you can... It's hard to tear it down. It's not simple. Not something they recommend. You can swap the RAM. You could swap the CPU and the hard drive, but both are proprietary. So do you really, I mean, does that ever come up? Is anybody going to do that?
Oh, when I read the article, it said that the CPU socket was proprietary, but the CPU itself was probably standard, but they didn't verify.
Maybe. I don't know. But then they're definitely something with the hard drive as well. So they rated this a 3 out of 10 on fixability because
nice.
You probably shouldn't be doing it.
Now, the old iMacs, the glass was held on with magnets, and this is glued, I think. And the magnets is the way to go because you could just get a suction cup and just pull it off. And it really wasn't a completely terrible experience to deal with the old school iMacs, especially the larger ones, like the 27-inch ones or the 24-inch or whatever. Those were a little bit more of a pain. But the 27-inch ones weren't terrible. I feel like Apple... should have at least made the effort. I mean, come on.
Again, I don't think it's about effort. I think it's about getting you into the Genius Bar, and while they're fixing it, you're looking around and you're like, I could afford another $15,000.
Yeah, like, what is it, $5,000 for the reasonable base model?
Yeah, that one. They have not looked at the unreasonable ones yet. To call that reasonable is kind of disgusting.
Other CES news is LG has shown off the world's first 88-inch OLED display. It's really thin, it's really light, 88 inches, and 8K, not 4K, 8K.
You think so that's four legit? 4Ks. Is that picture legit, or is that Photoshop?
I don't know.
Because it looks real nice.
It does.
They got that jewelry.
What is it, like $13,000?
I don't know if they priced it or not. Of course, 8K, what are you going to watch? You know, we always talk about this. Now, in Japan, they've already got, was it 10K?
The 10K was just... not really 10K as we would think of it, according to one of the Wikipedia articles that I read. 10K was not really as many pixels as you would think it is.
But what is going to drive this, and what media are you going to consume? Now, I think in Japan they've got an 8K channel, don't they? One of their telecoms maybe has an 8K channel.
Japan, the magical land of the future.
I don't know what you watch on it, but if you've got to have that pixel density... It's, what was it, LG?
If I were using a display like this, I would use it as a computer display. So unless this has DisplayPort 1.4, I'm not interested.
But are you going to run 8K? What are you going to use 8K for on your...
Probably run at least 8K.
I mean, for your desktop, I mean, you know, some, maybe, you know, programming and that kind of thing, maybe, but...
I have to scale the fonts up because the 88 inches is probably not
so
large.
So what use case...
There's no use case.
Yeah. Maybe if you were going to have, you know, split the screen up with a bunch of different VMs or whatever, you know, how many windows on one screen do you need at this point?
Well, with 8K, gosh, I could fit like, let's see, 4, 8, 16.
Like you're going to have like neck carpal tunnel from tracking everything. It'd be like a cat watching a tennis match.
I'm going to have to do some sort of eye tracker where it moves my cursor to the quadrant that I'm looking at automatically. That's just some next level technology right there.
On the other hand, I wouldn't turn one down if you're going to give me one for free. If they want to throw us a review copy, we'll take a look at it.
We're so far down on anybody's radar from anything like that. It's just, I don't know. Ford is giving its factory workers robot exosuits to ease the burden of building cars. If anybody is like a factory, like a day worker or whatever, and they want to do a Skype interview, I would be glad to do a Skype interview with you if you have one of these. Because, you know, this guy, it looks like he's holding an engine block, but on further and closer examination, he's holding a plastic Pelican case, which doesn't weigh anything.
These are, the idea is very cool, though. So the probably the hardest part of building cars is that the car is over top of you, and you're working with your hands in the air. And of course, you've been painting some ceilings lately. You understand how...
I can't feel my shoulders. It hurts.
Prolonged, keeping your hands over your head for prolonged periods of time is very difficult. And this robot, once you hit 90 degrees, the robot gives you the ability just to rest against it. I don't know how you, like, deactivate that. There's got to be some sort of movement, right?
I recall seeing a movie where they were, like, trying to build a clone Iron Man suit, and it just snapped the guy's spine in half without even thinking.
That would be funny if something went wrong, because I think these things, they have to be plugged in. They might have a battery pack or whatever, but it's like, you know, all the line workers are walking out, and they just got their hands over their head. So is this a terrorist attack? No, the robots are broken.
Somebody was mining Monero on the exosuit, and that's what went wrong.
The temperature just goes to like 250 all of a sudden. You can't get it off. Now, interestingly, I don't know how they adjust it, but it works between, I think, 5'8 and 6'4. Everybody can wear the same suit. So that's pretty cool.
Neat. Well, this is we include this just for the nonsense of it. There's some guy that uploaded a video of white noise. Was it like 10 hours of white noise?
Now, importantly, though, he made his own white noise. He was some sort of musician. He set up white noise and he recorded it. This was a perfectly original white noise recording.
But white noise I would question whether white noise is copyrightable in the first place.
Well, yeah, of course.
Because the definition of white noise, that it has to be some sort of creative work. And I'm pretty sure that the circuit for generating white noise was patented more than 20 years ago, which means that the patent has expired on white noise generation anyway.
Anyway, it got 5 different copyright claims. These weren't strikes. These were people attempting to monetize. And when we say people, we mean robots. And so I think he did this just for...
For the lulz.
The experiment.
For the lulz.
But it shows the serious, serious issues that YouTube has with its copyright claims when something this ridiculous.
We're advertiser friendly. 5 different people were like, this is all our copyrighted stuff.
You know what's hilarious, though, is when it's contested like that with different people, nobody gets any money.
Except Google. Google gets the money.
I guess they do like that, don't they?
Yeah.
That's the best case for them.
Now, interestingly, I learned something that I didn't know researching for this story, and that was the Supreme Court has actually ruled. So if I made a device that generates white noise and I patent that, I could theoretically control all of the recordings of white noise generated by my machine because I have a patent on it. And copyright, of course, is longer than the term for patents in the U.S. Patents is 20 years, I think, maximum, with all the extensions and all that kind of stuff. Once the patent for my device expires, the Supreme Court has ruled that I cannot use copyright to protect that output for longer than the patent would have allowed.
Can you imagine trying to prove to a jury that your white noise was different than somebody else's white noise?
Oh.
So, no, there are minor differences. There are hints of leather in mine.
That's so much like the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Like the only thing I can visualize is like whenever the Douglas Adams was talking about like dealing with the bureaucracy and the paperwork and things like that. That is exactly how that would go down. Just it's like, no, here's the proof that my white noise is different than your white noise. And at that point, it's like, what is the point to existence at that point?
My white noise is 20% more effective at putting you to sleep.
Oh, look at that. Chrome. Yeah, not enough memory. You know this thing's got 32 gigs of memory.
Maybe the JavaScript changes from Meltdown are ruining our browsing experience.
Okay, so people are using Pornhub to stream Hamilton and Zootopia because Pornhub is the last bastion of not instant copyright violation, I guess.
This is hilarious because there are regularly people who try to put porn on YouTube and they constantly have to fight it. And so now people are putting non-porn on Pornhub.
Just to be able to watch it, I guess. Wow.
Now that Hamilton, I don't think that it's ever been recorded for public consumption. This is just like, you know... the cam versions of it or whatever, and people are uploading it. But it's one of those things where, like, if you really, really wanted to see Hamilton, you would have to fly to New York, get a hotel, get tickets. I think the tickets are like it's so in demand. There's like a lottery. So you have to win the ticket lottery, and then you have to pay all those expenses. So that's not, you're not going to do that.
Guys, just put it on Amazon Prime. You could make so much money.
Well, they're already making plenty of money. I'm sure they'll do that eventually, but they got to milk the theater run for as much as they can. But yeah, people put, and they also put a lot of, like you mentioned Zootopia, there were a lot of Disney movies. And that article made a point. It was like, do not let your children watch this because the ads that it injects are not safe for children.
Well, that was, it's like the bad life hack. It's like, oh, here's a life hack. You can find children's movies.
But you have to have a long conversation afterwards. Pornhub is, they are, it's hilarious what a socially, like, it's sort of like the Robin Hood type thing because everybody thinks they're evil for porn. But they had the snow plows. Have you seen the Pornhub snow plows? Yeah, yeah. And they've donated money to all kinds of things. And a lot of people won't take their money.
Like cancer research.
It's one of those crazy things.
Yeah.
I love reading stories about Pornhub doing good things.
Speaking of something vaguely related, this is on the mirror.co.uk, but a Christian ex-convent schoolgirl is selling her virginity online. So I guess we're including this because it's online. No other reason.
You could take part. I really, really wanted to. Krista didn't join us today. I don't know. She's got something going on, but I really wanted to see her disgust. Because I love it when we bring up stories like
this. Well, it's going to be on the Patreon podcast because we're going to bring this story over to that as well. So you've got some incentive there.
Now, this is not unprecedented. There have been other girls who have sold their virginity online. Now, if you're wondering how that's legal, it's like, wait, that's prostitution, right? Well, she's doing it through the famous Bunny Ranch that's outside of Vegas. And in the past, they've done that for other girls. They take half, which is crazy.
400 in the past similar auctions have been from 400,000 to like 3.2 million, although 3.2 or 3.7 million or whatever, that girl backed out.
The girl backed out, not the guy paying 3.7 million. Man, that is, I can't, can you ever envision any woman who you would pay that amount of money to take her virginity?
I would just, if I had that much money, I would just live out my days working on, you know, random technology projects and just like, goofing. It's like, okay, I'm going to order everything on off of Adafruit.com plus all the other stuff I can get my hands on and just tinker with that until I run out of gas.
That is, it's interesting because when we were talking about this before, you were like, but she's not even 18. It seems like in the virginity selling world, it's like wine.
Yeah.
Because the further you get with it, the more of a prize that it is.
I never would have thought that that's a thing, but that seems to be the thing based on the price point data.
Now, I'm sure there is a tipping point when you get like 35 or so. It's like, I'm sorry. It's turned to vinegar now. We're no longer looking for it. But 23, I think one of the 3.7 girl was probably, I think she was 26. She would probably fetch a fair amount of money.
That was a plot point in Maniac Mansion Day of the Tentacle. You had to put wine somewhere and leave it and let it turn to vinegar. Like you dig it up after 400 years. And then you use the vinegar in something because you didn't need wine. You needed vinegar and you had to send it back in time. That was pretty cool. Nothing to do with
totally
anything.
Related to this story.
Speaking of things not related to anything going on in the contemporary world, the CDC is planning preparation materials for a nuclear detonation. So this is like training material for doctors, nurses, first responders, and things like that on how to respond to a nuclear fallout type scenario. Yes, we've entered the new Cold War, I guess, because yeah. This is a thing.
Now, do you remember in the 80s, we did drills.
Yeah, and tuck and roll.
You
or
get
tuck and
under,
cover.
You get under your desk.
Yeah, well, that's going to totally protect you from nuclear.
I can't even. Like, what? Do you think they're going to be a little bit more realistic with this one?
No.
But if I think the general public can tune into this, right?
Yeah,
is that
yeah.
true? So if you want the latest tips on surviving the nuclear holocaust, now they did talk about one of the biggest things for surviving is. You turn off your ventilation system, you get into a room with no windows, you tape up the door, and you spend the first 24 hours there. So step one that you're probably going to want to do is to get offline copies of all the level one content for a 24-hour period. Get you through it. Get enough battery power to see you through that.
A car battery powering an iPod will last for years.
But yeah, you know, the joke back then was you get under your desk, you tuck your head down between your knees, and you kiss your ass goodbye. Because if it's a nuclear bomb, that ain't going to save you.
Yeah, look, there's this radiation thing. It's like, if you do survive, you're probably going to have cancer real quick.
Like, if you make it through that first critical period, live each day like it's your last, because it very likely is. Live, laugh, and love.
Wow. we've set a new record for the most depressing episode of Level 1 News.
You got to embrace the absurdity of the modern world.
We can say definitively the worst episode of the year.
Well, the news was exceptionally bad. It affects everybody. The last story was the death of modern civilization. So yeah, there we go.
Neat. Well, there we go. Well, I wish we could like colonize the moon or something first, because then maybe we would have a chance of surviving.
We'd probably nuke it before we colonize it.
Neat. As a show of force. That's just how we, humanity, roll. I don't know. All right. We'll see you next week.